Welcome to the 122nd episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee, and today I'm joined by the lovely Quizmaster Mark Davis.
Hello, Lee. How are you today?
Doing well on this Halloween evening.
Ooh, it's so spooky.
Yeah. Did you have a costume this year?
I went as a bumblebee. Bumblebee is like my de facto, like my default costume, because somehow it still fits my body. And it's I don't know how many fat listeners we have, but it's a very weird Halloween. I know multiple fat people that have like a weird relationship with Halloween, because if you go as anything besides something that is inherently fat, you are just a fat that, like fat Spider-Man.
I see.
Fat He-Man. So it's, and I'm sure for women, it can be even harder with all of the expectations for women's bodies to be a certain way or whatever. So Halloween has never been like a super awesome holiday. Like, I've never really looked forward to it a whole bunch. The fat bumblebee has always worked out for me. And I was thinking about possibly going as Squirrely Dan from the hit television series Letterkenny. But that is like, I think, the default fat guy costume this year, since everybody's like fallen in love with Letterkenny so much. I know I've seen a couple people pop up in my timeline on Facebook.
You didn't just want to be one of the Squirrely Dans. You want to be a cute bumblebee.
Yeah. I do have a pair of coverall or overalls still, and so I was kind of like part of the way there, but I figured when I woke up, I was like, it's just easier to just throw on this freaking bumblebee thing, and it always works out, you know. People always seem to like, I loved your Steven Universe family costume.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we let our little one pick out the costume ideas each year. So last year we did Adventure Time, and this year we did Steven Universe, and I got to be Steven.
That's perfect. Yeah, you did very good over the sunglasses look.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Much respect. Yeah.
Shade tipping. That's what we call it.
Perfect.
And Kyle Ann was Amethyst, and our daughter was Lion, which is a character I'm not familiar with, but she was like, it is a pink cat, and that is what I want to be for Halloween.
There you go.
So that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I've seen a couple episodes, and it's... It seems like a really fun show. We listen to the music all the time in the car. The music is just great. If you haven't checked out the Steven Universe soundtrack, there's an artist on Spotify, Steven Universe, and they put all the music up under that. Check that out. But we're here to talk about trivia, really.
It is
Halloween, but we're also here to talk about trivia.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. So I've picked out some questions for you for today's quiz, including astrology. I know how big you are on that. U.S. presidents, coastlines. You love a good coastline question, don't you?
If I get it right, I will.
Okay, well, I've got a thinker. I don't know. It's possible, though. Actor inventors, actors who are also inventors, famous sculptures, and finally book adaptations. Those are the categories I have for your quiz today, Mark. How about for me? Do you got any cool categories?
Yeah, I think so. I have presidential necessities for becoming president. Mm. I have a question about big events in the 90s. I have a question about haunted houses. I have a question about music, and some other good ones that I'll throw in there for you.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it'll be a good one, I think.
Before we get to that, though, how about we go over a weekly wrap-up?
Let's do that.
Okay, on Monday, we held No Nonsense Trivia Pub Quiz number 285. We had a different winner for each round that evening. The first round went to a team called Lee Thinks Social Distancing Doesn't Apply to Dogs, which I'm on the fence about. I'm not sure how that factors in dogs, but I was petting some dogs on Monday. I'll admit it. The second round went to Trivia Noon John. And the third went to Professor Noka, PhD, Noka being one of the dogs that I pet. Her owner would be Elise. That is, she was playing solo. Also, our overall winner with 85 points. So congratulations to Elise on that. Mark, how did your teams do at Nice Guys Pizza Trivia on Wednesday?
They did well. I'm just now realizing I changed my phone to dark mode.
Cool.
And you would think so. until you go to read the names and text is white and it is on yellow. And then all of a sudden it becomes a little less cool because you can't read anything.
That sounds like egg mode. Like a yolky background and ugh.
Yeah, I mean it looks
like dark mode, not yolk mode.
There Terrible. We go. Okay. So Trivia.
This is some of that Android good. Shit, man.
Oh yolk yeah. mode. Watch out for my my green bubbles. Professor Noka PhD. I believe swept the evening.
Wow, two nights in a row. Two quizzes in a row.
Actually, there was another team who won the first round, I believe, and they bounced. I think they won and just took off.
So they're cheaters in your mind. I know how that goes.
I don't think that these ones are cheaters. Okay. No, I think these ones are legit. But then Professor Noka, PhD, I think won the second and third round. And I can't read these fucking scores to save my life because everything is all fucking topsy-turvy. And suffice it to say that they won the second and third rounds. We had Abby, Mike, Gina, and Brett playing on Zoom, as well as the usual suspect under the name Whiskey is the answer.
Mm. Ian with a name change.
Changed the name a little bit. And, of course, Whiskey Tango, I believe, won everything. If I could read these damn numbers, holy shit, it's just blowing my mind how hard this is to read. And we had some locals down at Ollie's Pub that were playing as well via Zoom.
Awesome.
And so that was very cool. And I think they're going to try and make a weekly thing out of it. Let's see here. Okay. Now I've got the darkness with me. Whiskey Tango, 79 points. Ollie's Pub with 56 points. Team Eldags playing with 51 points. They were killing it. They were doing a great job.
Good job, Woody.
Fantastic night.
Right on. On Thursday, on Twitch, we had a doubleheader by Pokemon Fan 12332, who won both Twitch quizzes 87 and 88 with 132,703 points and 110,961 points, respectively. H-Bomb and Friends, Valkia, Whiskey Tango DC, and Korok were also high-scoring players for those quizzes. Korok won our audio round, being the player who was able to most quickly identify the performing band for each guitar solo we listened to. We had a guitar solo identification round. Yeah, maybe we'll try one of those.
Please give me
165,474 points total for Korok, with the Feeble Corn and Tiffany Moko coming in second and third place, respectively. As far as our live trivia goes, you have a few opportunities to check us out this week. Tonight, Monday, November 2nd, we'll be back at the Palace Pub and Wine Bar for live trivia. We'll be asking trivia about sitcoms such as... I have nothing here. I don't know why I'm... I have no categories written in here. You're not getting a preview this week because I didn't prep the script. So I'm sorry for that. But please come out, join us tonight, Monday, November 2nd at Palace Pub and Wine Bar. We're going to kick off our quiz at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 4th. You can actually have your choice if you're here in Southwest Florida. Or if you're on Zoom, you only have one choice.
On my territory.
Oh, stop it. I'm all the way across town. We've got dueling trivias on Wednesdays. Mark will be hosting Nice Guys Pizza Trivia at Nice Guys Pizza in Cape Coral. That starts at 8 p.m. on Wednesday. And I will be debuting a new weekly Wednesday night trivia event at Pointy Bell Brewing Company in Fort Myers, Florida. So that gets started at 7:30 p.m. this Wednesday, November 4th. And similar format, you know, to our other events. You can find more details about that in the show notes of this episode. And, of course, you can play No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch at our regularly scheduled time of Thursday, November 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I believe, right? Aren't we ditching daylight this week? Daylight savings time?
We are.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
So we'll be at Eastern Standard Time this week on Twitch.
Yes.
Visit twitch.tv/nononsensetrivia and give us a follow to get a reminder on that. And make sure you follow us at No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch and social media to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. join us. Won't you? Lovely.
Yes.
All right, let's take a little break and we'll get right into trivia in round one.
Sounds good. And we're back.
Boom.
Lee.
Mark.
How would you like a question?
Please. I'm ready.
How much do you think you know about what it takes to be allowed to become president? Do you think you know a pretty fair amount?
No. I'd say I know a little.
Okay.
I think I know the age, and I think I know the nationality requirement. And
okay.
That's about it. And I might be wrong on the age even. We'll see. We'll see if this is really
a person running for president. Originally, I was going to go with age, but I thought it was a little too easy. Mm. So I had to switch it up.
Okay.
A person running for president of the United States must have a record of living in the country for a minimum of how many years?
Oh, this is interesting. Oh. I did not know about this. So you can't just like be born here and then go live in another country, I guess, for a certain amount of time and then come back and expect to be president. You got to stay in the States for a little bit.
Yes, sir.
So if you like, that's interesting. So like if you were to say live in France for a year and then come back, the timer starts over again.
This is where they got it wrong with Barack Obama. He was born in the United States, but then he moved to Kenya. You see,
I don't know about that.
In Kenya for a long time. No, it's not true.
I don't know about that one. I don't know. I think he was in Illinois for a long time.
Illinois. They hate that. Don't you, Chicagoans?
Home of the skunk weed. Chicago. How many years must you live in the United States? I'm going to say, I think you have to be 35. I think that's the number. You have to at least be 35 to be president.
I'll tell you that's right.
Okay. All right.
I'll tell you that's correct.
I'm going to give myself a little early one for that just to make myself feel better because I'm not going to get the
next one. If you're keeping score at home, that does not count.
That's just for my own self-esteem.
Yeah.
Maybe the answer is 35. Maybe you're not allowed to live anywhere else. No, that seems really draconian and strict. And I wonder if this requirement has ever been tested, or this is very interesting. I like this question a lot.
Thank you.
Let's see here. So presidential terms are broken up into 4-year increments. Let's assume you're going to want your next president to know a little something about how the country's been run and at least be in the country, right? So how many terms do you want them to be aware of? I would say 3 at least, or 3 presidents with double terms is what I'm saying. I'm thinking faster than I'm talking here. I'm sorry. So let's see. Okay, you got 8 years max, you know, unless we're going far, like back to FDR or something like that. But let's say this is, you know, 8 times 3, 24. 24 years. That's a long time. Maybe it's 16. Sounds more reasonable. I'm going to go with 16. 16 years.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
Wrong.
Though you are awfully close.
Oh.
Awfully close. There are three main qualifications. And then two or three follow-up qualifications. You must be a natural-born U.S. citizen, be at least 35 years old, and be a resident in the United States for at least 14 years.
Okay. 14
years. Yes.
I wonder how that number came to be.
I looked it up a little bit, and I was not, I'll be honest with you, I didn't like dig super, super deep, but I didn't find anything.
I wonder if like Martin Van Buren had anything to do with it, because wasn't he born, he was Dutch, right? There's something interesting, or he spoke Dutch.
I was going to say he probably had like Dutch parents or something.
Exactly. He spoke Dutch, and well, I think English was a second language, if I remember correctly. Miscorrect us if we're wrong.
There is a law called domicile that perhaps that is maybe that has something to do with it, depending on the nationality. I don't know.
That's interesting. I don't know. That's fucking interesting, man.
That's fucking interesting, man.
Astrology is my first category for you. It's a bit of a, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how you do. Don't be discouraged.
Is astrology the one with the rising and the falling and the sun and the moon?
Yeah, but I'm not going to ask you about that. I'm just going to ask you for a constellation. Okay, okay.
I did have someone give me a birth chart for myself. If ladies out there want it.
Is that what you're supposed to do? Me. Is that like a Tinder profile? Your birth chart? You like post it up?
It is a thing that people are nuts about. People will be like, you know, depending on the person you're wooing, they'll be like, where were you born and when?
So you show them your birth chart, and then if they prove it, basically anything goes, right? Because they looked at your birth chart, and they're like, well, I know this type of person, so.
Yeah, exactly. They can just automatically
You're free to be yourself, is what I mean. That's what I mean by anything goes.
The birth chart is, from my understanding, like the complete splay out of, like, because it has all your houses.
House Snow.
What all those mean.
House Lannister.
You know, someone should make an astrology thing that's related to Game of Thrones. You could probably get more guys into it. If it was like, oh, the sun's rising in your house Targaryen.
I have a Night's Watch personality type. Very cold and stoic.
Right, right.
Believed to be the world's oldest star chart. What constellation is engraved on a sliver of mammoth tusk that was found in Germany in 1979, but is estimated to be over 30,000 years old?
Well, I'm not gonna take a lot of time here. So if you're listening at home, you better make up your mind real quick or hit pause, because I didn't see this, but I did just see recently that apparently, I can't remember where I read this or where I heard this, but one of the, maybe like one of the great pyramids, or like the, I don't know if there's like a head pyramid or whatever, points at Orion at like the certain time. And I mean, Orion with the three stars in the belt, it just seems like it kind of writes itself. So knowing that they were observing Orion, or they believe that, you know, this fucking thing was built. Can you imagine them fucking building that giant ass pyramid by hand and getting it so like it wasn't right and being like, fuck, Orion's.
Well, Mark, I think that's the trick, is you just wait like 3 months and then, oh, it works now. It lines up. This is our sacred
now is
date.
What I meant. Yeah. Now is the time. So I'm gonna go with Orion.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. Yep. Fantastic.
Yes, the BBC reported that the small ivory
black cock,
the small ivory tablet was found in Germany in 1979 in a cave in the Ach Valley in the Alb-Danube region. It's small. It's less than 2 inches tall. It has notches carved in the side that indicate that it's not part of a larger piece, since the side is ornamented as well. And on the one side of the tablet is the man-like being with his legs apart and arms raised. Between his legs hangs what could be a sword. That's what they say is between his legs, a sword. It's also been theorized that the tablet may also be a pregnancy calendar because there are 86 notches on the tablet, which is the number of days that would be subtracted from a year to determine human gestation. So it's a very interesting object. There's maybe the origins of astrology, at least in this German area, you know, the Egyptians, it sounds like they had their own thing going on. But yeah, Orion, a very popular constellation in early astrology. It has some of the brightest stars in the sky in it. So very good.
All right. Here's your first, your second question. What event took place? And I'm using the word event kind of loosely, I guess. What took place on the evening of June 23rd, 1993, making headlines worldwide?
June 23rd, 1993. Did you give me the category for this?
I believe when I prefaced earlier, I said just events in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
93, you were what, 8?
Yeah.
I just guessed that.
You were right. Wait, in July?
Damn. Yeah.
Oh, I was only 7.85 years old.
Damn.
So close. One more month. And I'd be there.
Having a birthday in February, it's like automatic for me. You may as well.
Yep.
Presuppose that I was
I was there, man.
Was there. Whatever advanced year.
I'm wondering if it's the gained worldwide attention in 1993 in July. In July, peas grow there.
June 23rd.
Oh, June. 1993. Oh, that's like 8 days before July. I wonder if it was Heaven's Gate. The mass ritual suicide where members of the Heaven's Gate cult believed that the spaceship behind the Hale-Bopp comet was about to arrive. And they, I can't remember how they killed themselves, but they put on Nikes, or no, Reeboks. It was Reeboks. And covered themselves with cloths. There's a very interesting podcast about this. And I remember being pretty young. But I wonder if it was...
Hail bop, ba-doobie-dop, bop-doo-wop, dibby-dop-dop, hail bop.
There's a band called Django Django that has a song called Hail Bop that's pretty good. But I think, I feel like I was a little older than... Let's see here. 1993. I wonder if it was Princess Diana dying. There was a car accident that involved some paparazzi that were trailing her. And a big accident. That feels a little bit more right. Was that 93, though? Or maybe it's the first Oklahoma City bombing. There's so many events in history.
There are.
Or the first World Trade Center bombing. That's what I meant to say. Not the first Oklahoma. There was one Oklahoma City bombing, but there was the first World Trade Center bombing. That's. I think that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with the first World Trade Center bombing. It just feels right year-wise to me.
I'm sorry, you're incorrect. You were right with the year. So Princess Di, Princess Di dying, which sounds weird to say, and Heaven's Gate both took place in 1997.
Okay.
Princess Di died August 31st, 1997.
Rest in peace.
And yes, big rip. And it was March 26, 1997, that deputies of San Diego County Sheriff's Department discovered the bodies of 39 members of the Heaven's Gate religious group in a house in Rancho Santa Fe. The correct answer, well, I'm sorry, well, the answer that you gave, the first bombing, did take place in 1993, but that was February 26th. The answer I was looking for was Lorena Bobbitt slipping into John Bobbitt's bedroom and cutting off his penis and then freaking out, driving off, and throwing it in a field.
As memorialized, an event memorialized in the Weird Al song Headline News.
Yes, a send-up of by the Crash Test Dummies. And he went on to basically become famous for his severed penis that was reattached. They put it in on ice in a Big Bite box used for hot dogs at a 7-Eleven across the street.
Wow. Well, that was made for the shape, I guess, right? What do we got around here that fits the shape?
Out. And we should also point out that John Bobbitt, you know, Lorena Bobbitt argued that that he was abusing her, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not like she just did it. A lot of people thought she just did it because she was being spiteful or whatever. And I also do want to mention that he did do a porn called Franken Penis.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you got those stitches there. Holding it all together. Yeah. Why didn't they call it Frankenweenie? Oh, wait, that's the Disney movie. I forgot.
Yes.
Yeah. Same thing. Already taken. Okay.
It's based off of the porn.
Mark, I have a U.S. president's question for you. We were just talking about the requirements of becoming president, how you have to be at least 35. We have not had a 35-year-old president, though. We have had a youngest president, and that is who my question is about. Sworn in at the age of 42. Who is the youngest president in U.S. history?
We've done this before. We've played this dance. We've had this dance.
Have we?
It's been had.
In one way or another.
It's been here. Mm-hmm. This is just one of those, you know, the oldest, the youngest, the this, the that, the shortest, the longest. Sworn in. Is the sneaky thing here, because the youngest president elected is different than the youngest president sworn in. The youngest president that was sworn in was a vice president for someone who was sworn in after someone, I think, was killed. And I can't remember who it is. So I know all the facts around it. I just don't know who the fucking person is. My gut tells me it was Abraham Lincoln's vice president. And I can't remember who that is. I think it was Zachary Taylor. I mean, only four presidents have been assassinated. I'm guessing it just has to be one of them. I know, or I mean, I guess it also could be... Richard Nixon's vice president. Oh, God, I feel like such a fucking ding dong. Who I think was Lyndon Johnson. But I don't think he was the youngest. I'm going to go with Zachary Taylor.
No. I'm sorry. Andrew Johnson was the vice president that was sworn in after Lincoln. The answer that was you were... I'm so proud of you for sussing at least the sworn in thing. That was a great little detail to pick up on, because you're absolutely right. The president who was assassinated was William McKinley. His vice president who was sworn in was Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt. And of course he was reelected, as we know.
I did not know that Theodore Roosevelt was his assistant or his vice president. And it's funny, because now that you mention it, I think I did read that. And I think that everybody wanted him to go to run for president, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. And then we have, you know, the course of events that laid out the way they did.
Indeed.
Huh. Here's your last question of the first round. Dragon's House of Horror captured the Guinness Book of World Records record for longest indoor walkthrough haunted house in 2015, and operates out of what southwestern city?
Well, they say everything's bigger in Texas. So my gut's telling me to go there. But if you want to talk about showmanship,
tell me.
You go to Las Vegas. And I can see Las Vegas. It's kind of been a developing area over the last decade. It's almost like getting a reputation as a second Silicon Valley. There's a lot of tech there. So maybe they're always trying to do new stuff out in Vegas. Why not have a huge haunted house? That's very long.
Dragon's House of Horror.
Mm.
They are having it again this year, but it's going to be a drive-through.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go with Las Vegas. That's my guess.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Texas? Isn't Texas?
It isn't.
Oh, okay. Phoenix. Albuquerque.
No. Yeah, Albuquerque
oh,
is
really?
The correct answer.
Oh, Albuquerque. They're Breaking Bad.
They are Breaking Bad. Albuquerque, the same city that I couldn't remember the name of. Albuquerque is the correct answer.
Okay.
And we had a surprising number of people guess Albuquerque. I don't know if they knew it or not, but last week or 2 weeks ago when I asked that, yeah, we had a surprising number of people.
Nice. All right. Well, let's keep it with geography. I have a coastlines question for you.
Great.
What U.S. city has 520 miles of coastline?
It's a lot of coastline. There's so many ways to think. So my mind first goes to, I wish I knew more about this shit. An island? A city on an island? What if one of Hawaii's islands is like its own city? Does that make sense? Like if Oahu was just Oahu and the whole thing was a coastline, you know? If it's not going to be a long city, it's going to be a round city. Something where like bends up around. Someplace in Minnesota with a lot of lakes. But, you know, I'm thinking like Alaska, Minnesota, California, possibly Florida, Key West. See, but all those keys have different names. Marathon Key. I feel like this is just one of those that's like more interesting. Did you say U.S. city?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling I'm just kind of flapping my little wings trying to fly, but it ain't going to happen. What if I fall? Oh, but my darling, what if I fly? But I think it's falling for me here. So aww. Sad.
I don't like to think about it, Mark.
I'm going to say, I think I'm going to go... I think I'm going to go with my Hawaii guess. I don't know why I said Oahu, but I'm going to say Oahu.
No. No, Mark. The answer, it makes sense, but it also might surprise you. New York City. Hudson River, you know, there's all the boroughs. You know, lots of ins, a lot of outs, as they say in the Big Lebowski. Yeah, New York City has more coastline than Boston, Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and Miami combined.
Wow.
Yeah. Very surprising, huh?
Coastline of that river. Yeah. It hurts.
I came across this. I was like reading like this like weird New York City, like, it was just a PDF that was like talking about like, you know, different facts about the city and stuff. And they were like, we boast 520 miles of coastline. And I was like, what the fuck? That is a lot of coastline. And I couldn't even find a table or chart that had like all the coastline of all the different cities. So I just went out and like independently like looked like how much coastline does Boston have? Because that was one that I thought like Boston would have a ton of coastline. But yeah, I was surprised. You know, Long Beach only has 11 miles. That's not very long.
That's not very long.
That's kind of a Magic City thing going on there.
Yeah, and I, you know, that was the biggest thing with me, like, thinking of, like, you know, how it would have that much. I was thinking of it, like, being on the water and around. I wasn't really thinking of stuff inside of it and stuff, but, you know, it is what it is. Hey, I learned something new today.
Yeah. All right, that's 3 and 3, right?
It is.
So let's take a little
break. Short and sweet and to the point. Let's take a little break, yes. We'll be back after this little bit of song.
All right, Mark, before we get started, don't really have any no notes or miscorrections, but I just did want to just tweak one thing I said on the last episode. I probably should have phrased this a little bit better in our question about fish. I said that Rolling Stone called them the most important band of the 90s, and I feel like the way that I presented that was like it was 2005 and they said this. But they said this in 1998, and the quote is, "Given their sense of community, their ambition, and their challenging, generous performances, Fish have become the most important band of the 90s. And they said that in 98. So, I don't know. I don't know if they would hold that opinion today. I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I know you took umbrage with that claim that they were the most important band of the 90s. So, I just want to clarify.
It's a ridiculous claim. Well, it's a ridiculous claim. It's patently false.
In 98, would you have said that?
Dude, I didn't give a flying shit about Fish in 98. I think
Rolling Stone did, okay?
They released an album called Billy Breathes maybe sometime around then. And again, I don't need anybody coming at me with Fish hate. You know, whatever, they do their thing. They're very, very, very talented musicians.
I think our audience was on board. Nobody really stuck up for them.
It's true. Good.
Nobody wrote in.
Makes you know we have the right people listening, huh?
But if you do want to write in with a missed correction, a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or give us a call, 1-929-356-6966.
Ah, the 69.
Mark, I have a box Lee. Office question. What? I'm sorry?
No, what'd I was you just say? Saying Lee. Hmm? Said your name.
Box office records question. Named by Empire Magazine in 2014 as the greatest film ever made. No, I hope you don't take umbrage with this. We'll see what you think afterwards. But okay. named by Empire Magazine in 2014 as the greatest film ever made, what 1980 film set the record for the highest box office earnings? I wrote earrings for that year. Box office earrings.
Those sweet, sweet box office earrings.
Yes, 1980, the year, the highest grossing movie at the box office in the United States, and Empire Magazine called it the greatest film ever made in 2014.
Oh, boy. I've promised myself I'm going to try and shorten my sus.
Feeling a little self-conscious?
It's one of my New Year's resolutions.
Sus-conscious?
Is this Honest Hour?
Sure.
Blown away that anybody would listen to us talk for 2.5 hours. Just absolutely shocked. And I feel like new listeners see 2.5 hour runtimes and they're just like, no, buddy. Holy shit. 2.5 hours is a long time. So I feel like if I can do my part in even getting that down to 2 hours... I'll do my best.
As an editor, I appreciate that. But yes. I think we're fine. I think people would listen to us for 3 hours.
I'm
we got the good again, shit, Mark.
Absolutely blown away. Yeah. Well, I mean, it means more than I can say. You know, I don't know what year it came out. There are obviously a lot of good movies from the 70s and 80s. Well, a lot of good movies from the 70s. 80s, touch and go. What year did E.T. come out? Because I know that had a lot of fucking... That made a lot of money. And I know I saw it when I was a kid. I feel like it might be more like early to mid 80s, but I can't shake E.T. out of my mind. And what other movie then was making that kind of money? I mean, so I'm going to go with E.T.
Very close, but 2 years off. E.T. came out in 1982.
82.
Yes.
Okay.
The movie that I'm talking about is The Empire Strikes Back.
Hmm. Okay, not the greatest movie ever made. No, okay, but right.
You disagree with Empire magazine. You don't like these magazine opinions, I can tell.
Empire. Let's first point out that Empire magazine, Empire Strikes Back.
You think they have a bias?
I think they might have a little biases. Right. Yes, I think they might.
I have to admit, I did find that very funny when I was writing this question. I was like, "This is too."
The
perfect.
Empire magazine yeah. Strikes Back. I mean, Empire Strikes Back is a great movie. I think a lot of people's favorite out of the three.
Oh, definitely my favorite.
Best movie out of those ever three. Made. Don't know about that.
It's so hard because I feel like I've sat with yesterday. That movie for so long. It's just hard to even like look at it as its own movie, divorced from the right. rest of the Skywalker saga. You know, it's so
right.
It's almost like a Marvel movie. Like, how good can any of the individual Marvel movies be? Because they rely on themselves so much to become, you know, they're not greater than the sum of their parts, basically. The MCU is awesome because there's so many movies that work so well together and they culminate.
It's a giant Voltron.
Yeah. It's a big, big Voltron. And I feel the Star Wars movies are a little bit like that. But I do like The Empire Strikes Back. But yeah, greatest film ever made. I would not say that's number one.
No,
it is good though.
It is. Here's your first question in the second round. In 2019, BMI. Should I give you the question the way I asked it, or should I tweak it a little bit?
Give it to me the way you asked it.
In 2019, BMI recognized what Police song as the most played song in radio history?
I'm going to go with Every Breath You Take because I think that might have been the first Police song that I can remember hearing on the radio. And it just seems like it's their biggest hit. Sting has said, you know, it's Misunderstood, which a widely listen to song would, you know, provoke that reaction from him. He's not talking about, you know, Don't Stand So Close to Me is Misunderstood because it doesn't get played as much, you see. So I'm going to go with Every Breath You Take.
That is correct.
All right.
BMI president and CEO Mike O'Neill stated for the first time in 22 years, BMI has a new top song in our repertoire with Sting's timeless hit, Every Breath You Take, a remarkable achievement that solidifies its place in songwriting history. He received an award from BMI at the awards ceremony held in the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm.
And isn't that the song that he wrote at the desk of the James Bond author Ian Fleming?
I believe so.
He was at his bungalow in Jamaica and cranked out a Every Breath You Take.
Yes.
Man, lots of cool facts surrounding that song.
Yeah, it replaced You've Lost That Loving Feeling by Mann and Wiles.
I see. And also, Diddy sampled that for I'll Be Missing You.
He will be missing the Biggie Smalls.
Yep, his tribute to the Notorious B.I.G. featuring
Christopher Walls.
Mm-hmm, featuring Faith Evans and 112.
Probably Faith Evans was Biggie's wife. Mm-hmm. So that would make sense.
Yep. R.I.P. Biggie.
Yes. Pour a little beer out for him, mm-hmm, or whatever you're sipping on.
Actor inventors, your next category. Through his company, EcoPack Industries, What actor, who famously played a postal worker, developed his own packaging material called Sizzle Pack? What actor, through his company EcoPack Industries, who famously played a postal worker, developed his own packaging material called Sizzle Pack?
Lee. Oh, what are you doing to me, buddy?
What?
What are you doing to me?
What? You know this?
No.
No?
Well, when I think of famously played a postal worker, I think of one motherfucker. And that is Cliff Clavin from Cheers. You might be like, well, what's Cliff Clavin's real name? I know it's John Ratzenberger. John Ratzenberg? John Ratzenberger, I think. So I'm prepared with that answer. Is there someone else who famously played a postal worker? That's a good question. For a movie or a TV show, you didn't say. You just said famously played one. And that's where you're getting me. But when I think of famous people playing postal workers, I think of Cliff Clavin. Like, his whole life surrounded being a postal worker. What the hell's he doing now? Probably not acting. Plus, it has the added, like, punch to, like, what's the chances that you know John Ratzenberger? But I do. You see. So I'm going to say John Ratzenberger.
That is correct, Mark.
Yes!
Very good. Very good.
Did I crush your dreams?
No, I'm happy when you get questions right, actually. I like when you get my questions right. So, no, that's great. I'm glad you got that right. I will say, though, you are forgetting about Wayne Knight. Wayne Knight is another actor who famously played a postal worker.
Oh, yes.
So the pool, if you would have told me
Wayne Knight, I would have been like, oh, fuck, yeah.
Do you know what Sizzle Pack is?
I don't.
You probably recognize it if you saw it. It is small pieces of paper, strips of paper that are zigzag folded.
Okay.
You ever see that? You ever get a package and you're like, what is all this crap in here that's like all messy? That's Sizzle Pack.
What's this bullshit?
Yeah, but it is more ego-friendly compared to fill foam peanuts and bubble wrap. That's what they originally intended Sizzle Pack to replace. And Mark, what is John Ratzenberger doing these days? He is known also for having a role. He's the only actor to have a role in every single Pixar movie. He is their right-hand man. Yeah. And also, just a little Clavin fact that is trivia related. There was an episode of Cheers where Cliff was invited on Jeopardy. Have you ever seen this episode?
I know that he is a big time know-it-all. Like, he actually know him. I'll tell you something like always. Yep. Little facts.
Exactly. So there's an episode of Cheers where he goes on to Jeopardy and he has a game lock by the end of Final Jeopardy and then wagers it all on a wrong answer. The question was, what do these three people have in common? And he says, what is, they've never been in my kitchen. And Alex Trebek says, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. And he says, it might be incorrect, but it's also correct because they have not been in my kitchen.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate questions like that.
Right. It all depends on how you write it. But this whole situation provoked a real life Jeopardy fan rule, an unofficial rule on the show called Clavin's Rule, which says that if you have a game lock, you never bet more than half of your position in between second place. So they can't win. You've always bet
$1.
Do you remember
what the question was, what the three people were?
I can't remember exactly off the top of my head who the three people were.
Holy, how are you going to bring that shit to me and not tell me the
fucking
question?
Well, look up Clavin's Rules. Google Clavin's Rules. I'll put a link in the show notes. And
well, I'm about to ask a goddamn question here.
All right.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'll look it up while you suss. Here is your next question. What U.S. city whose flag displays three wavy blue lines, as well as a blue fleur-de-lis on a red background, was the first to host the Olympic Games?
Wow. Okay. So it's got a fleur-de-lis on it, My first thought was New Orleans. I've never seen the flag of New Orleans, but I know, you know, the Saints have the fleur-de-lis on their helmet, and it's a big symbol around the city itself. But is New Orleans the first, you said the first U.S. city to host the Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
That seems unlikely. I know Chicago's flag has the four red stars on it. It's not Chicago on a blue and white field. And man, do I even know any other city flags? I'm having trouble thinking of any other city flags. Do we have a city flag here? And we have to have one in Fort Myers.
I'm sure we do. Yeah.
It's probably just some like variation of the Florida state flag. They do that. They're just like, just copy it and put something different on this part. All right. So maybe it's another French city. The fleur-de-lis. Montpelier, Vermont.
Fleur-de-lis Brettschneider.
Hey. If I ever start a flooring company, I'm going to take that name. Fleur-de-lis. Thank you for that.
Fleur-de-lis.
I'm stealing it.
You're welcome.
Let's see here.
Archibald Leach, Bernard Schwartz, and Lucille LeSueur.
Yeah, see, I didn't remember those because I did not recognize those names. Do you know who those people are?
Cliff's response of who are three people who have never been in my kitchen is deemed humorous but incorrect. The correct response was, what were the real names of Cary Grant, Tony Curtis, and Joan Crawford?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is a damn good question, Lee. That's a threefer.
Do you think the writers of Jeopardy wrote that or the writers of Cheers?
That is a good question. Probably the writers of Cheers.
Good for them.
I don't feel that you would cram three names in like that. I think that's a little crazy.
Or getting those three people in your kitchen all at the same time. Man.
Over a decade later, on the Jeopardy episode airing June 6, 2000, contestant Jean Noumier didn't know the correct response to the following Daily Double. Hedda Tessman, Helen Alving, Newt Bravik. Noumier's response was, who are three people who have never been in my kitchen?
Nice. That's what you call callback right there.
Yes. On that occasion, the category was who created them, making Noumier's response more explicitly incorrect than Cliff's. The correct response was, who is Henrik Ibsen?
Don't know.
He is a Norwegian dramatist. They are characters that he made. Mm.
Can you describe that flag for me one more time?
Absolutely.
Wavy blue?
I forgot. Yes. What U.S. city whose flag displays three wavy blue lines as well as a blue fleur-de-lis on a red background was the first to host the Olympic Games?
I'm really just going to go with New Orleans. It's the only thing that I can think that I know that has a fleur-de-lis, and I feel like these other cities that I'm thinking that are French cities are too small.
That's incorrect. Wrong. St. Louis, Missouri.
Mm, really? The first Olympics were in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Hmm, okay.
The first United States Olympics. You've got blurry. Oh, there you go. Yes, St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
Very ugly flag, I think. It's not.
You're describing red on blue is never a good combo, basically. Having those two on top of each other.
You should look it up. It's not very pretty. So.
Famous sculptures.
Okay.
Rachel, an outdoor bronze sculpture that has served as the unofficial mascot of Seattle's Pike Place Market since 1986, is modeled after what kind of creature?
I think I've seen this before and I can't remember exactly. Of course, Pike Place Market, known for their fish. Throw the fish. He throw the fish. I'm going to say mermaid.
No.
Wrong.
Sorry, Mark. It's a pig. Rachel is actually a functional piggy bank with proceeds going to local charities. Designed by Georgia Gerber, dedicated in 1986 after the market's 79th birthday. It was modeled after an actual pig that was also named Rachel that lived on nearby Whidbey Island and was the 1985 Island County Prize-winning pig.
When you say Gerber, mm-hmm. is that from the trusted Gerber baby food conglomerate?
I don't believe there is a relation. This is a sculptor, Georgia Gerber, who modeled the pig.
Gotcha.
Another pig sculptor named Billy, joined Rachel after being installed on the western side of the market in 2011. So there are now two piggy banks at Pike Place Market.
Fantastic. Are you ready for your next question?
Yes, this should be the last one.
Is this the last round? Yep. Yes. Pinniped is the less used name for what animal? Pinniped, P-I-N-N-I-P-E-D. Is the less used name for what animal?
Little tiny legs is what I think. Little pins. Little feet. Little pin feet. Because pet is walking, right? It's foot. And pin, I mean, maybe it doesn't mean pin-like, but I mean, there's a reason why a pin is called a pin, right? It's got to mean something. Pinniped. I don't know why. The first thing I was thinking was like, oh, it's a sandpiper, you know? They got those like little tiny legs. Always piping around the beach. But I don't know. Maybe it's an insect, like a centipede, a pinniped. Pinniped. What's pinniped? Pinniped. I don't know.
I wish I could answer. It's so funny because every Halloween Spotify playlist will put zombie in there because zombies, but it's like not a scary song. It's not like, I mean, it's scary in that it's talking about the troubles
right. And
how awful Ireland was at the time, but
mm-hmm. it's not about George Romero zombies. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's like calling people out, right? It's like saying, like, you're a zombie, right? Isn't that the meaning?
I think
what's in your head, zombie? Like, you're not even paying attention?
Right, like you're just blandly following the Protestants or the Catholics. I don't know if it's talking to both sides or one side or the other. I don't know if they were from Northern Ireland or the rest of Ireland.
Yeah. But. Rest in peace to that singer, too. We're talking about lots of musical
Dolores
legends.
Dolores O'Riordan, mm-hmm. I believe was her name.
Okay, what was the question again?
Pinniped is the less common name for what animal?
Pinniped. I'm just trying to think of things with tiny little legs. Daddy long legs. These just don't sound like pinnipeds, though. I guess I'll go this. It can't be right. Maybe it's the shoebill stork. Maybe. Those things are crazy looking. But what would the name mean? In that context, they don't seem to have particularly small feet. They just look like Jim Henson designed them. They look like Muppet creatures. God was like, yo, Jim, you want to take over this one? Give me Shoeville Stork. I feel like they very much look like modern dinosaurs, basically.
They are very creepy.
Yeah. But I want one. I want to touch it. And they're like, you can't touch it. And I'm like, why? cannot touch it. I'm gonna go with the sandpiper. The unlikely answer, the sandpiper.
I'm afraid that's incorrect.
This is what I need somebody to suss with. The pinniped. What is it, Mark? What's the pinniped?
Pinna means fin. Ped means foot.
Fin foot.
The correct answer is the seal.
Oh.
The seal.
Great singer, too.
Yeah.
The seal.
Kiss from a rose on the gray. Mm-hmm.
Not on the grave.
Not on the grave.
That would be a Mondegreen.
I just came across the other Mondegreen that I fucked up and I posted, and like 90% of people were like, I didn't know that either. And a couple of people were like, you're a ding dong.
What's that?
Let me go up like eye blister in the sun.
Oh, yeah. I did not know
I that. Always thought it was like a blister in the Same. Sun. It is not. Mm-hmm. Listener, take it in. It's like eye blister in the sun, not like a blister in the sun. I thought because of his accent, he was saying like a blister in the sun. Nope. Like eye blister in the mm-hmm. sun. Like it's the kind of thing where you can say it both ways and you can hear A or you can hear I.
Yeah. You don't even have to sing it's it differently. So really
crazy. No,
you just have it's to like understand
the,
it's it differently.
Like the dress. It's like the shoes or the dress.
Yep.
Oh, crazy.
Thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome.
So, it was the seal.
It was the seal.
Okay. Well, let's take a little break. And then we'll come back with... how many Read My Questions do you want to do? We got plenty here. They're coming in hot. Well,
let's do two.
We'll do two.
Let's come back and do two.
All right, we're back. Mark, we have a couple Rate My Questions here to get through. We have a question here from Ben Hoover. You remember Ben's question? He had some questions that were written with some pun hints.
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben writes, hello again. Got another one for you. Morten Harkett asked what band to take him on as lead singer. Morten Harkett asked what band to take him on as lead singer.
You know this?
I believe I do.
Yeah.
There's a clue in here that you might overlook.
On him.
Mm-hmm. You're singing a couple bars here from a song called Take On Me.
Take him on. Take on him.
I'll be God.
Yes, I believe
that's the one.
And also, when you figure out the answer, you'd go, aha. You see?
Yeah. Yes.
How wonderful is that? How brilliant is that? I'm going to say aha.
Aha. We are correct. That's right. Yeah.
It doesn't hurt that he's got that name, too.
Morten Harkett.
Yeah, it sounds pretty Swedish, Danish, whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm. Dutch, I think they are.
Sure.
I don't know. Like Teddy Roosevelt. I like this question. I think it's pretty elegant in its simplicity, but it could be a bit tricky and barren if you miss the pun. Like if you don't catch the pun in this, Morten Harkett asked what band to take him on as lead singer. I feel like you might give up on this and be like, I don't know. Just like write down any band. But a quizmaster with good inflection would do well with this question. So, just really emphasizing that clue. Maybe not too much, play the room. If you think the room needs a big hint, then drop that.
I was going to say, I would love that question with it being snuck in. Like,
mm-hmm. You want it subtle.
Yeah, I want it nice and subtle. Where,
like I said, it depends on the room.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And how hard you want your trivia to be.
if your room is going, these questions are hard, you know, and you got this one coming up, you might want to emphasize that clue, you know,
unless you're release some of the tension. Unless you're a sadist like me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I give this 4.5 stars
out of 5.
Yeah,
I'll give it an A. I'll give it a solid A.
Nice. Okay. Thank you, Ben. We have another question here from Proverbial Lightkeeper Matt. Right, gentlemen, I've been loving the recent podcast episodes, which always help getting through Mondays at work. I thought I'd send in another one for your star/alphabetical ratings. Harris Glenn Milstead, most famous for roles in 70s cult movies, is better known by what stage name? Harris Glenn Milstead, most famous for roles in 70s cult movies, is better known by what stage name?
Do you know this?
I have a guess. When I think of 70s cult movies, I think we've talked about him recently here on the podcast. John Waters made a bunch of movies in the 70s that were cult movies, right? Mm-hmm. And Harris Glenn Milstead could be the real name of Divine.
I think you're right.
The trans actress that worked with John Waters on Pink Flamingos and several other movies. Is that, yes, what you were thinking?
That is what I was thinking. Yeah, I know. I remember the last name Milstead, and I'm pretty sure that it is Divine.
Let's see if we're that cultured. Mark, we are correct.
God damn, we're good.
These rate my questions. We're pretty good at this when we suss together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this question quite a bit. There's a good clue in there, you know. Obviously, I felt like if you know it, you know, if you're familiar with Divine in the first place and John Waters, I think that this is gonna lead you there. If you aren't familiar, yeah, there's not a lot here to go by, but that's your fault for not knowing.
Yeah, it's tricky on a number of levels. You have to know Divine first of all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to I don't know. It's a really good question.
Is there a pool of answers for this? Like, I mean, besides Divine, could this be describing anybody else who had stage names?
Well, I mean, when you think of 70s cult movies, you know.
Meatloaf?
Yeah, you know.
That could be a potential wrong answer.
I guess it could be Tim Curry. I mean, you probably...
Is that a stage name? I mean, Tim Curry, that's his real name, right?
Well, you don't know. Like, I mean, that's the question. You know, I mean, There are a lot of people who have names like Elton John. People could think Elton John is his real name. It isn't. Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Reginald Dwight. Dwight? I don't know. Reginald Dwight.
Who's Dwight? Yeah, I like this question quite a bit. You know, I'll give it 4 stars.
Okay.
It doesn't have the pun, the juicy pun that Ben's did. But yeah, you know, I like it. I like it quite a bit.
I would maybe give it an A+. I think it's...
Oh, you like it better.
I think I do. I mean, it's not as juicy for sure, but I think it's a little harder, which I like. Both in knowing who Divine is at all, and as far as, you know, it being a man's name, so you tend to think of a man at first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You got to know enough about 70s, you know, movies, you know, 70s cinema, mm-hmm. I guess, or whatever, and cult stuff, and, you know, have an inkling of who Divine is, and that it might be Divine's name as a man.
You've convinced me. 4.5 stars for this one as well. I think it's, you know, they're two different difficulties, but, you know, really good questions here.
Agreed.
If you'd like to send us one, you can do so by emailing us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or giving us a call at 1-929-356-6966.
Are you ready? Or is it me or is it you first?
I believe it's your turn to ask first.
Okay. Here's your last question. What European country's name translates to mean calfland or land of cattle?
It'd be funny if it was... Well, you said country.
European country.
Yeah, I was going to say Hamburg. But that's a city.
That's so good.
Yeah. Let's see here. Where would the land of cattle be? Germany, Austria, Sweden. Austria. The Aurex was spelled A-U-R-A-C-H, I think is how you spell Auric. And I-A, that sounds like land of, you know? Austria? The Aurex. Because they didn't have cows back then. But they did have these giant ox things that were like big cows. And then the dairy cow kind of came to be after, you know, dairy industrialization occurred. I know a little bit about this, Mark.
Yeah,
I hear that. I don't know if this is the right answer or not, but...
I am amazed.
I'm having trouble, you know, I was thinking it's not Spain, Italy, France, obviously. Could it be Portugal? I mean, Portugal's like right there on the coast, I'm not thinking cows. And yeah, I mean, Germany, I don't think. Austria, I can't get away from that AU and the Oryx connection. And it would just be beautiful if that lines up. I'm going with it. Austria.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Wrong.
Damn, I sold myself on it.
You did. I mean, that was a great sus. I love your brain.
Thank you.
But even when it's wrong.
Yep.
According to the most widely accepted explanation, Latin Italia may derive from Oscan Vitilu, meaning land of young cattle.
Oh, I forgot that Italy is Italia in Italian, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't call it Italy. They don't go, Italy!
Hey, I live over in Italy.
Yep. Huh. I wonder what Austria means. I'm going to have to look it up. Book adaptations is your final category, Mark.
Eastern realm, Austria.
Austria is the Eastern realm?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No Oryx involved.
No.
Oryx Wells. No, Orson Welles. Orson Welles appears as Father Mapple in a 1956 film adaptation by John Huston of what 1851 American novel, which Orson Welles himself had previously adapted for radio and would go on to adapt for the stage. I'll give that to you one more time.
Please. That's a lot of shit.
Yeah. I just want to apologize. This was like the third version of this question. And I was like, I still don't feel like it's right. And Kyle was like, just leave it alone. Like, it's done. It's like stressed over this question. But it's interesting.
I think I know the answer.
All right. Here's the question one more time. Orson Welles appears as Father Mapple in a 1956 film adaptation by John Huston of what 1851 American novel, which he himself, Orson Welles, had previously adapted for radio and would go on to adapt for the stage. And one other fact that I could not... I just felt like it was too much information to try and squeeze into one question.
Well, then don't give it to me because I think
I
know it.
Okay. All right.
I did in high school, the first or second year I was there, we did a halftime show called Of Sailors and Whales. And there were five movements, and each movement was about a different character. Now, I've never read Moby Dick. I know Call Me Ishmael is the first line or whatever. But there was sections. This is section for so-and-so, da-da-da-da-da. The third movement was a singing movement, made to sing. The ribs and terrors in the whale. We had a ship bell. Gang, gang. Arched over me in dismal bloom. Gang, gang. And it's about getting fucking fucked up by this whale. And I think it was Father Mapple talking about Jonah and the whale. And this took place in Moby Dick. I think that's going to be my answer.
Yes, that's correct. Very good. Very good.
Being a band geek fucking rules.
Yeah. It certainly helped here.
Yes.
Father Mapple.
Yes.
Yes, Orson Welles played the character. He just does 5 minutes in the movie. But, and apparently he was really having trouble with it too, which is surprising if you go watch it. It's a very good performance, as you can expect from Orson Welles, playing a minister reading the story of Jonah basically to his congregation, and young Ishmael sitting in the audience going, is that going to be me in this movie? But yeah, Orson Welles, he played the character in that movie. He had already adapted it once before for radio. People might think, oh, War of the Worlds, because he's known for doing War of the Worlds.
And I will say that did kind of like, I was like, Father Mapple, I know that name. And then you said adapted for radio. And I was like, I could totally see there being like a priest that was like, you know, hey, da-da-da. But I was like, but I don't know enough about War of the Worlds to know that Father Mapple was in there. And that's when it struck me that.
Yeah. And the other thing that should turn you away from War of the Worlds is that that was a British story, not an American novel. H.G. Wells is British.
Mm,
and Herman Melville is American. So that's another important distinction. And would go on to adapt for the stage. Orson Welles made this play called Moby Dick Rehearsed, which was like a meta play of like actors. They were doing reading some Shakespeare, and then a actor manager comes in, played by Orson Welles in the original version, saying, we're going to rehearse Moby Dick now, which is the stuff that we got on stage with us, you know, so it lent itself to a very small set. Christopher Lee was in that. It did have that was the original run in London. It did go on to Broadway. And Orson Welles would again revisit this in an unreleased 1971 film, which was just him reading the story. The footage was never released for that or edited together, but it was compiled by the Munich Film Library. So there is a version of it, and you can see some clips of it on YouTube as well. We'll put some links to those in the show notes. But yeah, Moby Dick, I had no idea that Orson Welles had such a lifelong, it seems like he just kept going back to it throughout his life.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I can see it being the kind of thing, especially as you get older, if you have like a white whale of your own, it's a very, that story kind of grabs you that, if there's something out there that you fought with and that's, you know, almost taking your life, but you're still obsessed with it. Even being at my young old age or my old young age, you know, I know loads of people that have that kind of thing where it's like, whether it be a specific person that they like can't get over or, a specific job or whatever. It's just like the devil, you know, and or like the thing that you need to topple or whatever. So, yeah, I can see it ringing true with him. Those movements, by the way, Ishmael is movement one, Queequeg movement two, Father Mapple movement three, Ahab movement four, and the White Whale movement five. And it is a really great and interesting piece of music of sailors and whales. If anybody is interested in checking it out, if you just Google it, you can find a couple different versions of it.
We'll do that Googling for them. We'll put in the show notes.
Yeah, W. Francis Macbeth is the person who wrote them.
Aha. All right, that concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Thank you everyone for listening. Please join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways. The easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. You could support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim, our team captains, Sean, Lydia, Gil.
It's Gil.
Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook, David Holbrook, David Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Nicole, Alex, Jenny, Christopher, Logan, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. And last but not least, our Rumple Snailskins. Thank you, Kevin, Sarah, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.,
Mike Clavin,
Michael S.,
Mike So Divine,
and Michael J.
Mike, just wondering when we're going to get a new review. You haven't had one in a while.
Remember about Lee waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat?
Come on. I'm still sweating.
We have some people, well, we'll get to it here in a minute, but as a little sneak peek, we're going to talk about the Facebook group. Steady flow of people. These people. Oh, yeah. Come on. Maybe we need to write something in the Facebook group.
But I'm just saying that we've fallen out of the charts in Mauritius now.
No.
Okay. Not Mauritius. Yeah, we're out. We've fallen out.
Not Mauritius. Come on, Lee. Mm-hmm. Do you really have to do that to me like this?
Please complete us by reviewing us in Mauritius.
I hate you.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or a miscorrection,
literally
you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
I'm actually updating the Facebook podcast group right now, saying please rate us wherever you get your podcast. And what's crazy is that people are going to see this and then they're going to hear this on Monday and they're going to be like, I remember seeing that.
And I didn't leave the review.
Fine.
Oh my God, stars. I feel terrible. I should go do it right now while I'm listening.
If they only they knew that we were crying.
Yeah, boo hoo hoo.
Yeah.
That's us.
Boo friggin' who. What a bunch of babies. We have a Facebook group you can join as well. And you, if you were on it, you saw me make that post a couple days ago. Remember that? Jerk. Mm-hmm.
Just go on
Facebook. Yeah, on Halloween while we were sitting here instead of eating yummy candy, we're talking about boo, we don't have stars. Maybe for Halloween we should have been 5 stars.
We should have. There's just, always next year.
Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service. Five stars only, please.
Mwahaha.
Until then,
have a great week.